Ryan. Welcome to Girls with Goals. We are here with Ryan Gresh. He's the founder and CEO of the Feel Good Lab. We're going to talk about all things gut health, inflammation, how food triggers inflammation. I'm really excited. I feel like gut health, inflammation, these things are like, they're kind of buzzwords in the wellness industry, but not everyone actually knows what that means, myself included. So I'm excited for this conversation and for what we can learn from you.
Yeah, I'm glad you framed it up that way of what we can educate people on, like our mission and what we see the future of the world. We want to be the WebMD for wellness. Obviously, we sell products and tools and test kits to get you there, but it's not about that. Like realistically, people have the things they need to be healthy. It's just that, and a lot what we'll talk about is why are we in such a situation with out of control inflammation, toxic burden, all the things we're dealing with. Well, it's decades of that building up that yes, maybe today we need some additional tools to help us kind of get back. But ultimately, our bodies were created pretty miraculously where we have those tools already. If we get enough sleep, enough sunshine, naturally, we won't need a lot of these additional things, right?
Yeah.
The sunshine one, for sure. I know we're all in the northeast of, you know, the US. So yesterday was the first day that I think we had more sun than average. I think the UV was like 4, which is crazy for an East Coast winter. And my skin looks better. I slept better. I had so much more energy and was just like happier. And it's so insane that good sleep, which I was not getting previously because I was lower energy throughout the day, and just the effects of some of these really basic things, you know, that we've had around forever, but we're not really using them as tools.
And maybe before we even get into it, I like to talk like my hierarchy for wellness. So let me just kind of start off with my background quick. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. And so, you know, my advice and my experience, I think take with a little bit of grain of salt. And obviously people do your own research. A lot of what we'll talk about is everybody is unique. So some of the things we talk about is not a one size fits all model. It's very important. But, you know, my journey, I come from a family of pharmacists, my grandfather, 5 of my aunts and uncles, my brother, Mike, and I ran away. I was an aerospace engineer for a decade because I wanted nothing to do with what I saw going on in my family pharmacy, which was in the 90s. We were not helping people. I'm 38 years old. So I grew up going to work with my dad in our family pharmacy and our community coming in, getting sicker and sicker every day from the medicines they were taking. Opioid epidemic was blowing up at that point. And what I learned was when you take a medicine that treats a symptom, which a lot of the medicines we take nowadays do, you do nothing to address that underlying root cause, inflammation, some of the things we'll talk about. If you don't address that underlying root cause, you'll never get better. Or there's a very low risk or low chance that you'll get better. You could, but, and you're just going to mask that symptom forever and have to take that pill. So I wanted nothing to do with that. Luckily, my dad in 1999 sold his conventional pharmacy and became one of the nation's first combined functional medicine practitioners with compounding pharmacists. I'll talk about what each of those are because a lot of people don't understand, but that is the future. And this was back in 99. He was one of the first people in the world doing this. And that's why after a decade in aerospace, I came back to join the family business because now they're actually help identify the root cause, figuring out how we can treat that and give the body the tools, the things that it needs to be optimal. And I've just seen so many patients see the most miraculous outcomes from their pharmacy that I wanted to create a brand, the Feel Good Lab, to take the work that my dad and brother do at our family pharmacy out to the rest of the world.
I know, and Catherine and I have both, and we've talked about it so much with each other and with friends, but like been very frustrated with traditional medicine and the healthcare systems recently, like when we've gone to doctors for specific things like skin or gut health or anxiety, and it feels like you are prescribed the same cookie cutter thing as everyone else. It feels very, very hard to get personalized care to actually address the root cause of things these days. Like, and it can be so frustrating. So it's very refreshing to hear that as your mission and hear that you guys are making this more available for people to figure out, because the truth is, like, whether it shows up as skin or as anxiety or as inflammation or anything, a lot of the time there is a root cause that is causing it. And that is just the way that it's manifesting. And so it's really important to be able to find what those root causes are instead of just, you know, slapping a product on to mask
it. It's often the same root cause too. Out of control inflammation, oxidative stress, poor circulation blood flow, not letting the body get the nutrients it needs where it needs to be able to do the healing. And, you know, we'll probably dig into inflammation quite a bit. It's a hot topic, but out of control chronic inflammation to me is the low hanging fruit that we can all start to identify and address that's going to make our lives better. And that goes for people that are suffering from chronic disease or people that just want to be optimal.
Yeah.
It's the same things and the same tools that we have to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to talk about inflammation and what that actually is. Because I think if people say like, oh, I'm inflamed, I have inflammation, what does that actually mean? Like the first thing my mind would go to is like actual physical swelling, maybe puffiness, maybe an injury. But I imagine it's much deeper than that, especially if it has, you know, such widespread effects on the body. So how would somebody know I have inflammation? I am inflamed.
Everybody has inflammation. It is one of the most critical responses and it keeps us alive.
Okay.
What it really is it's signaling our immune system that we need to act. We need to fix something, right? You sprain your ankle, things swell up. Well, part of that swelling is the body signaling we need to send, you know, certain things to this area to start the healing process. So inflammation is always taking place. The problem is this low level chronic inflammation that's, you know, yeah, if it's happening every now and then, no problem. But if it happens every day for 3 decades, mm-hmm. now all of a sudden you start to see autoimmune conditions, so many sort of conditions that have this root cause with some sort of inflammatory component. And, you know, we can look a little bit about how that could be triggered. It's never the same for everybody, but if you live in the United States, we can start talking about a lot of the things that probably play a role for, you know, you guys are much younger than I, but your generation, my parents' generation, my grandparents, they're actually different things depending on when you grew up because the world was so different. Toxins like glyphosate that are in our food supply. So if you grew up, you know, 90s like me, 2000s, the glyphosate that we were exposed to was through the roof compared to, you know, my parents and my grandparents, things like that. So the toxins we're exposed to, they get in your body. Well, what does your immune system have to do? It's triggering inflammation to deal with that. Well, if you have toxins in your food every day and the immune system is always dealing with that, or if you have a leaky gut and a poor gut microbiome and food is getting through the gut lining when it shouldn't, the immune system is having to deal with it. Again, when the immune system spread all over trying to fight all these different things every single day, what happens when you actually get sick and need it? It's so depleted that it's like, I'm focusing on the food you ate yesterday because you have a leaky gut and it's got some glyphosate in it. I don't have time to deal with the COVID or whatever the thing might be that really needs the full attention. So this low level chronic inflammation is leading to a lot of autoimmune disorders. And it's really just sapping us from being the best version of ourselves from an energy standpoint and a healing standpoint.
What are some of those signs that somebody might be dealing with inflammation? Is it that energy, you think?
Everyone's different. I'll tell you, with the people we work with, and it's across a spectrum from older to younger, you know, we have somebody in college that it was acne. And unbelievably, we ran our food inflammation test. His father happens to be one of the best, you know, athlete trainers in the world. And so like very healthy family. However, healthy food is not healthy for everybody. And uniquely, when we ran this test for everybody, he specifically came back with eggs off the chart. He's like, I eat eggs every day and he works out. And how could it possibly be eggs? Well, sure enough, we said, listen, this test is giving us a signal that we're going to try to eliminate these for 8 weeks. It doesn't mean you can never have eggs again, you know, but let's try it because now we have a good idea. And it was super high on his test. 4 weeks go by and he sends me a long text that said, you changed my life. I used to be afraid to go out of my dorm room because my acne was so bad. I've tried every pharmaceutical you could imagine, pills, topical, all these sort of things. And he sent me before and after pictures and I could not believe it. Completely
wow.
different. So for him, inflammation was showing up in acne and he's much younger. In the older people we work with, a lot of the inflammation is showing up in joint pain. Mm-hmm. It's showing up in brain fog. And then the big one I think that we're seeing now more than ever is GI issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stomach issues. Everybody has some level of stomach issues. It's a spectrum of how, you know, leaky gut is a term that's used nowadays. But, you know, nobody that I've met in the United States has a perfectly healthy gut. And that's something I'd love to dig into a little bit down, you know, later in this podcast, because it's so important. I think it's the core of how we can really start to make a difference and turn the ship around in terms of where the health and wellness of our country is going and kind of get it back on the trajectory that it needs to go.
Yeah, I do. I love the kind of trend, at least in the circles and the content that I consume, that people are moving towards a more holistic and kind of all-encompassing approach to health and wellness rather than targeting specific things and taking these big extreme swings, especially with, you know, medicines and more over-the-counter stuff rather than let's go to whole food, let's go, you know, target whole foods in our diet and actual exercise to make these changes. I know my mom and I were just talking about, she was at the doctor and they tried to prescribe her something that she said, hey, can, and she's a nurse, so she's well educated on, you know, things in the medical field. And she said, hey, can we, why don't we try a bit of a diet change first or an exercise change? And this is the same conversation that she has with all of her friends. The difference is that a lot of her friends haven't even thought to, you know, introduce diet and exercise changes. And they're just go on medications that you're supposed to be on forever. And those medications have crazy side effects, but they kind of mask the symptom that you're experiencing. So people don't choose to go off of them or don't choose to explore other options. I know, speaking of acne and skin issues and blanket medications, I was at the dermatologist recently and I was there just for a regular skin check. And she, for my skin, which is, it always acts up in the winter, she tried to prescribe me a bunch of different medications. And I said, hey, I'm not really interested in, you know, taking anything orally or topically if I'm not educated on them myself and I make the decision to go on. And she said, oh, well, it would cure you. I said, well, I don't see that as a cure. I don't see a medication that only works as you're taking it as a cure. But it's just so crazy to me that even medical professionals are opting to push more less holistic options. Yeah,
I don't blame them though. And again, I came from this world. So my dad always tells the story of like, he was the problem. You know, he didn't have enough time. The system, really a system issue. The system is set up in a way where with insurance and big pharma and the way that doctors, you know, get paid, they don't have enough time and they have the tools that they have. And most of those tools are pharmaceuticals. They're not really educated that much in nutrition. Just, you know, for typical medical school does not spend a lot of time on those things. And the truth is, even if they were, a lot of people, we live in a society of instant gratification. So your mom, unfortunately, is an outlier where she says, I'm going to do the hard work. It's going to take months, but I'm going to do the hard work.
Yeah.
You know, a pill can start working right away. And that's why a lot of people go to the doctor and they want a pill. Why do you think that Big Pharma does all this advertising? Because they have the consumer coming in saying, hey, I want this thing that I just saw an ad for on TV, even though at the end of the ad, they go through the 35 side effects and all of the bad things. So in the United States, I want to be clear, we have the best medicine in the world if something happens. If something severe happens, God forbid there's an accident, you get cancer, the greatest country you could ever be in is the United States. We are the sickest country in the world. We spend multiple times more per person on healthcare now more than ever. So how are those two things go hand in hand? Well, it's because the model is set up for that acute care, not the chronic care. And how did we get here? Well, we don't eat healthy. We don't sleep well. We have way too much stress, social media, things that we're paying attention to. All of those things play a massive role. And it's not one day of that. It's a decade of that. That all of a sudden now you're in this position where, yeah, to go and reverse a decade worth of this low-level chronic inflammation, poor sleep, poor mobility, all these things, it's going to take a lot of work. I'll tell you, we've seen some of the most miraculous transformations. It's more than possible. It's probable if you put in the work.
So I want to talk about the food sensitivities, because and Catherine and I both took a food sensitivity test through the Feel Good Lab, and we got our results on that about what specifically triggers inflammation for each of us. So I'm curious, and I kind of would love if you would give a bit of a background for the listeners who don't know your company, haven't heard about it before, and don't know what it offers, so that through the rest of the conversation, they kind of know what we're referencing, because I have a lot of questions about, you know, how to take action on these things and why someone's results might be totally different from somebody else's.
Yeah, totally. So, and the genesis of this product coming out through the Feel Good Lab was because for a decade, you know, my dad and brother were using this in our functional medicine practice and seeing amazing results. People that, you know, really identifying what's the root cause of a lot of these inflammatory conditions is the things that we're putting in our body. It's not necessarily like, what can I take extra to fix the inflammation? It's what am I putting in that's causing the inflammation? Root cause, right? And it's often food, very often food. But what's unique, and you just brought it up, is every single person is different. It could be genetics. It could be your microbiome based on years. Now, obviously, you two are twins, right? Mm-hmm. So you guys are actually going to be more similar than most people. But even then, even being twins, you had very different results, right? And so the other thing that's different as well is there's a thing called a food sensitivity test. That's the majority of tests out there. It's a finger prick just like ours, but it only measures one side of the immune system. And because it only measures this immune response called IgG, I won't get into the weeds of what that means, but it's taking your blood, reacting it with food proteins and seeing if it produces an immune response. And that's super helpful. The problem with only measuring one half of the immune system is you're going to get a lot of foods back. And you're not going to know if it's false positives, if it's something you ate for breakfast yesterday. It means it's triggering an immune response, but it doesn't mean that it's causing some of these downstream inflammatory issues. So the reason that we partnered with the lab that we did is these were tests that my dad was running. Now, you typically would have to go see a functional medicine practitioner, and there's a lot more things. And we found a way to streamline that and bring it direct to consumer. We mail you a kit, prick your finger right at home, and then you get a consultation over Zoom, where we're able to do this much more efficiently for a lot more people. But the difference with this test is it takes that same IgG, immunoglobulin G is what it's called, and it also adds this thing called complement protein C3D. So now you need two signals to show a positive for a food to show up. What is that complement protein? Well, it's part of the body's inflammatory cascade. So the body's saying, here's my immunoglobulin tracking this food, or it's triggering it. And also it's triggering these inflammatory proteins to go and deal with it. And that out of control inflammation is the thing that we want to nip in the bud. So instead of getting 50 foods back, you guys probably had somewhere from 8 to 12 really core foods that showed up. And now we can take a much, because at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is, are you able to do anything with the data? If I give you 50 foods and you can't eat anything, you're going to be not very motivated, right? And so that's the biggest difference between our test.
Yeah, I am curious the difference between testing food allergies, testing food sensitivities, and then what this covers as like a whole broad spectrum of inflammation. Is there going to be a crossover if someone did like a food sensitivity test, or is that where they might come back with 100 results that aren't really actionable and you guys are helping get down to like what is actually making the biggest difference in your body?
Yeah, there's almost always a crossover of a food sensitivity to a food inflammation, but depending on when you take them, things change. Your gut changes. It could be healing. It could be a little bit worse. And our body's always changing. So typically when people retest, I'll tell you my example, I've done the test 3 times over many years. The core foods usually are still showing up as inflammatory, but how inflammatory might change between, you know, especially when I cut out gluten. Gluten ran from like off the charts inflammatory for me to into the yellow zone. So it was still inflammatory, but it wasn't showing up as severe. And one potential reason for that is my body, because it wasn't consuming it, isn't as good as reacting to it when it sees it in the petri dish and the blood reacts.
Wait, this is very interesting for me because I have always known, or like always as in like the past 2 years, that gluten is something I'm very sensitive to and it can cause GI issues. But actually, for the most part, I get that brain fog, I get headaches, I get lethargic. And so I haven't eaten gluten consistently for a couple of years. And when I took the test, I was really shocked that gluten came up, but as one of my more mild triggers. And so I was actually planning on asking you that, like, have I been gaslighting myself into thinking that gluten isn't a problem, or is it because I haven't had it in my system for so long that it came back as, you know, just mild, whereas I have always felt it to have an extreme reaction?
Let's talk about gluten. It's my favorite topic. Okay. So we give gluten like, you know, it's got the worst name in wellness right now. And the truth is, it's not the gluten. You guys spent a little bit of time, I think, this summer traveling. Like, the food that the rest of the world eats, the ancient grains, the wheat that they eat in Italy, everybody talks about this. Listen to any podcast talking about gut health. They say, oh, my friend says they went to Italy and ate all the pasta and bread they wanted. They didn't feel those same issues. Well, that's typically true. And the reason is we have an ultra processed wheat. And it has more gluten content in it. That started to change in the 90s and 2000s. So we have this like modified version of wheat. And here's the big thing. We spray our wheat with glyphosate at the end. So as part of the dry, we use it to dry it out. Now, the reason they use it is because it's really cheap way to stop mold from growing. But now we have so much glyphosate in our wheat supply. And if you look at some of the studies, even a lot of healthy brands out there, go and take a look. There was a study, I think, done in Florida where they looked at some of the healthiest wheat brands and found a significant level of glyphosate. And by the way, in the United States, we allow 3 times the glyphosate that Europe allows. Wow. So the gluten that you would eat here typically in the United States, if I had one piece of advice, in fact, I don't know if this would be my only piece of advice, but I would say to anybody that's on this journey of wellness, and of course, if you want to do the test and really identify the specific foods, it's always better than just blindly saying cut out gluten. But if there was one food, when people ask me, hey, if you had one food to try to eliminate it for 8 weeks, see how I feel, gluten, 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 gluten. Because you're not just gaslighting yourself, you feel those real reactions. And most people, I would say 90% of people, feel some form of better when they at least reduce the amount of gluten, because it's so prevalent in our American diet.
Every once in a while, I haven't had gluten for so long, and then I'm like, oh, but like this bakery doesn't have anything gluten-free and I'm with my friends, and like, maybe I should get something. And then I do. And then the next day I'm like asleep all day. And so it really, like, every time, that is definitely the thing that I feel have the most dramatic effect in my body. So what does happen inside the body when a food triggers an inflammatory response?
So, and there's another piece, I'm going to answer your question in a second, but there's another piece of this as well. When you run the test, is we look at the foods triggering inflammation, but then we also look at these markers that we can find in the blood that we know are supposed to be in the gut that can give us an indication if you have leaky gut. Now, what's leaky gut? Leaky gut is a spectrum. It's not like, oh my goodness, yes and no. It's like everybody has some form of things getting through the gut lining. The gut lining is one cell thick, and it keeps trillions of microorganisms in our gut staying there and allowing the nutrients and specific things to pass through. So it expands and contracts very efficiently. However, when you start to compromise the mucous membrane, so it's only one cell thick, so it has to have all these sort of things as protectionary measures. Why is most of our immune system on the other side of that gut wall? Because again, you have all these things coming in and out, so the immune system sitting there trying to pay attention of, is it supposed to be there or not? Do we need to take care of this? So when we measure for leaky gut, the biggest thing we start with when we look at cutting out these foods is it's a chicken or the egg situation. Sometimes a severely leaky gut, letting all these foods through, is causing them to show up as more inflammatory because the immune system is dealing with them all the time. Other times, these inflammatory foods are causing a leaky gut. And so it's a vicious cycle. So you certainly want to look at how can we reduce the inflammation being triggered by these foods, no doubt. But you also want to look at tools to help improve your gut lining. Things we'll talk about in this podcast, fiber, other tools like probiotics. So fiber is a prebiotic. Probiotics are those healthy bacteria. I would never recommend taking a probiotic without the prebiotic fiber, because the fiber is what they consume and they need to eat to thrive and survive. And then things like L-glutamine, which can be very helpful in healing a leaky gut. But the point is, it's not just a blanket answer. It's so dependent on you and your biology and the status of your gut health. So ultimately, with leaky gut being a spectrum, you get these food particles in the body and the immune system is saying, I got to deal with this. And it could be something healthy like eggs, right? That in many people's bodies that we test, the immune system is triggering and it's saying, we got to deal with this. And so now it's spending all this attention on these healthy eggs and it's not spending the attention where it needs to.
What are some of those like most surprising foods? I know we talked about eggs, but that might kind of shock people if anyone is listening, hasn't taken the test and is like, huh, I kind of feel like I have GI issues or I feel like I have some of these symptoms. What might surprise them as like a healthy food?
So the big three, the most inflammatory foods that we see are dairy, gluten, and eggs. Those aren't the surprising ones. Eggs are typically surprising. And it also doesn't mean you can never eat these foods again just because they show up. It means let's cut them out for 8 weeks. Let's see how we feel. And then we reintroduce them one at a time to really, really see what the impact is. You'd be blown away. A lot of people, even the person I talked about with acne, is like, there's no way, eggs. I said, please, you're an elite athlete. You can cut these out for a couple of weeks and just give it a chance and see how you feel. Because a lot of people don't know how sick they are until they actually get healthy. That was the case for me. I thought I was normal. Well, I probably was average in terms of gut. The average gut in America is not good. Yeah. So once you start to get more towards optimal, you realize, oh my goodness, I was living like this every single day. So those are the big three, but they're not the most, you know, those are the ones you could Google and see as like highly inflammatory in a lot of people. You know, typically we measure anywhere, the highest level test we have measures 176 foods. So we're getting into stuff like food additives, veggies, fruits, like all sorts of things, really a broad spectrum of almost everything you would eat in an American diet. The interesting foods are these random ones that is so unique for everybody. Me was turmeric. Turmeric is a supplement that we sell at the Feel Good Lab. I have it right behind me. It's one of the most potent anti-inflammatory supplements you could ever have. It comes from, it's really curcumin is these compounds inside the turmeric that are anti-inflammatory. Well, the turmeric root for me was triggering inflammation. So
that's funny, anti-inflammatory. So you might take that to try to fix it and then it's actually something that's triggering you.
And that's the point of like, that's an example of the individuality that all of medicine has, right?
Yeah, I pulled up my test right now and I'm seeing that on my highest reactives, I had both egg yolks and egg whites. Eggs are not like a daily part of my diet. So that hasn't been like crazy for me to
limit. But if you looked at what eggs are in, because eggs are in a lot of things.
Yeah, okay, valid.
They're in a lot of things.
And I'm like, I don't eggs like, are one of the hardest ones to cut out eggs.
Yeah.
Okay. Also lentils, which are not like a very typical part of my diet either, but cashews, peanuts, and I have peanut butter often. So that definitely would be like a trigger to say, maybe I have almond butter instead, you know, and know that that is a swap that could actually be helpful for me. Whereas for somebody else, it might make no difference whatsoever. And also I had canola oil, which I'm kind of curious. I think seed oils and what oils people should be using is definitely a hot topic these days too.
Yeah.
So I'd love to pick your brain on that.
I'm not an expert in seed oils. I'll tell you this though. I grew up in this family, right, with my dad, and I spoke a bunch about him being a functional medicine practitioner, pharmacist. So he's always been on this. And my mom's a nutritionist.
Oh, wow.
So I'm just like, you know, like I was home for dinner this weekend. She made the most delicious gluten-free, dairy-free chicken parm. You'd be like, gluten-free, dairy-free chicken parm?
Yeah.
Better than anything I've ever had in the restaurant. So I'm fortunate that I grew up in this home where like these things just weren't there. And now that I have a son, we're very, very diligent about it. I'm not an expert in seed oils. However, I've seen enough data to just be like, yep, not going to consume those when I don't have to.
I haven't told anyone this yet, but and Catherine and I are planning a trip back to Hong Kong in September. We lived there for 4 years growing up, which I feel like I reference somewhat often on the podcast because it shaped so much of why I love to travel and just who I am. To be fair, it's like a very important part of my life, especially by rebuilding the Mandarin that I lost after moving back to the US for high school. You guys know I love and use Rosetta Stone for Mandarin in general, but instead of doing it more casually, I've been committing more often recently because I have this trip that I'm looking ahead to. Instead of memorizing random vocabulary words or constantly translating everything back to English, Rosetta Stone immerses you directly in the language. You learn by connecting words with images and context, and then gradually build those words into phrases and full sentences, which feels like a much more natural way to learn a language. They also have this true accent feature, which I find super helpful, especially with Mandarin when you're working with all different types of tones. It gives you real-time feedback on your pronunciation. Which is super helpful because I think understanding Mandarin has always come back more easily for me than confidently speaking it. So having a way to actually practice speaking out loud has been really helpful. And I know I'm not going to become fluent again overnight, but every lesson does make me feel a little more connected to the language and place that were such a big part of my childhood. And now that I have this trip on the calendar, it's given me even more motivation to stay consistent. If you're ready to start your language learning journey, head to rosettastone.com and use code TODAY to get started. That's rosettastone.com/today.
Mm. And there's a lot of really olive oil is so good for you, like good olive oil. So like, yeah, it's expensive to maybe move in the direction of some of these much more healthy oils, but it's so important. I mean, my dad used to tell me, I love cars. Now my son loves cars. And I think of it now, it's so funny because he'd say, right, you're going to have 10 cars, maybe even more. You're going to spend all this money on them, changing the wheels, doing oil changes, whatever. And all this money, you have no problem spending it. And you have one body. What are you doing for preventative maintenance on your body? Yeah. Because ultimately, when you end up getting sick and you look back in hindsight, it's like, whoosh.
It's right? Either, you know, pay for higher quality ingredients and put the effort into your nutrition now, or medical bills down the line, or trying to fix it down the line. Which,
and what's the price? Is it worth it?
Yeah.
It's this quote I literally have like plastered on my wall here. I say it every day. It's from Confucius all the way back. Obviously, you can swap man with woman, but it's... it's a rich man wants 10,000 things, but a sick man wants one.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, we live in a society where most people just want to feel better. It's hard to think about like dreams and aspirations sometimes when you're not feeling.
Yeah.
Even if you don't realize how, I mean, like you said, you don't realize how sick you are. You don't realize how bad you feel until maybe you implement these changes or you take some extra, you know, baseline steps to increase your health, and it'll just, your energy, your interest in your health and your everything that you do just skyrockets, which I think is, and I'm very glad that the conversation around merging, you know, Western medicine and functional medicine is becoming more mainstream and people talk about, because it's, you need the balance. You really do.
I think a lot of what you were just saying comes back to, you know, the instant gratification that you mentioned before. It feels like everything in today's world is about instant gratification, from food to technology to everything. And it kind of takes being able to have patience and recognize that, like, hey, you're not just choosing what you're eating, what you're doing, what's comfortable today. Like, you are building the one body that you have for the rest of your life. And so that time's going to pass anyways. We should be doing the things that compound over time to make us feel our best.
Yeah, absolutely. And I sometimes forget that, like, this is the world. You live in this echo chamber, right? And then I talk. So at the Feel Good Lab, we have a lot of other things that we do. And this is not a pitch for what we do, but it's interesting the type of customer that I deal with because it's very different. So our flagship product that we launched with is actually a plant-based topical pain cream. And we have some products for athletes to use for recovery, delivering these plant-based ingredients through the skin to help reduce inflammation, improve blood flow, improve healing. It's been an amazing product. It's like absolutely unbelievable. But most of the people that we sell this product to are in chronic pain. They're a little bit older. A lot of them live in the middle of the country. You know, we live here on the East Coast and there's differences. And so what I hear, because I do all the customer service and I get phone calls every single day, it's a completely different mindset that some of these people are coming at it from. They're not interested in changing their diet. And that's okay. So you have to meet them where they are. We're really fortunate that they at least don't want to take opioids and pain pills every day because that's the thing that we're fighting against. So they're using something better like our natural pain cream that's going to be much more helpful with none of the side effects. But we're trying to educate them on the things that they can do to be the best version of themselves, help reduce inflammation systemically from the foods they're eating. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't want to hear that. Here's the exciting thing though. The younger generation, probably the people that listen to your podcast, I mean, that this is like one of the biggest topics, I think, of people between 18 and 38.
I do think it's a trend because I think a lot of people our age, at least the communities that we're in and the community that we're building with the show, are, you know, kind of actively noticing these things that are issues and trying to work against it. I also think a lot of our listeners are athletic, whether they are just working out every day for themselves or whether they are pursuing, you know, running races or college sports or anything like that. So for somebody who works out a lot, how does inflammation affect their athletic performance and recovery?
Oh, I mean, it's probably more important than ever. In fact, I have some of like the signed jerseys from some of the athletes, professional athletes that we work with here. The reason we love working with athletes is you almost have to be careful about the prescription you give them because, you know, we have this one athlete, he's in the NBA, and it's like, if you told him to jump off a bridge, he's just like in the mindset of whatever I can do to be the best version. That's the reason he got to the NBA. He's a good athlete, of course, but like probably the worst athlete in the entire NBA. Mentally, he's probably the strongest person in the entire NBA because he does every little thing he needs to do to be the best version of himself. And so he also is very in tune to his body. So he starts to make these changes and they start to compound. He was eggs as well. He was eating eggs every day. He showed up that day when we gave him the report, I said, you know, you're gonna have a hard time cutting out eggs. He goes, what are eggs? So again, that shows you the mindset he's in. But months later, he's like, I feel incredible. I didn't realize this low level inflammation and really what it was doing to me. Because here's another thing about the inflammation. I'm going to go back to a question you had earlier. Mm-hmm. Talked about food allergy. A food allergy is a different type of immune response. And that immune response is immediate. You eat a shellfish and you're allergic to shellfish, you're going to know. The food inflammation, this low level chronic inflammation, sometimes it doesn't peak for days later. Mm. So imagine being like, oh yeah, I had eggs 3 days ago and that's why I'm feeling the way I am. Now it can peak sooner than that, but oftentimes it's a little bit more delayed. So that's why the data becomes even more important. A food allergy test can be helpful, but typically you're doing a food allergy test because you already know. You ate the peanuts and you see the response. This is going to show you things that you probably were not aware because of that, right? And so with that being said, the elite athletes that we work with, I think they can notice things more because they're way more in tune. You know, they're working out every day. They're really seeing the benefits because they're pushing themselves to that kind of max and they're seeing like what a new PR could be, right? Pretty quickly of how reducing inflammation can improve performance on that end.
Yeah. It almost seems like a no-brainer to figure out what those internal things are because like there's a limit to what you can do externally. There's a limit to how much you can train, to how much you can recover in terms of making progress with your fitness and your performance when there might be these like internal underlying things holding you back. And if you can make those changes, then all of a sudden, you know, your energy and your performance might be able to skyrocket.
And the hierarchy that I look at, and this is something I made up, but it feels true to me. And I look at like, okay, what's the lowest hanging fruit things that I can do to be the best version of myself? And I look at how long I can go without something. So like what's crazy is I fast quite a bit. And this is one of the reasons I do. It's like, we can go weeks without food. Weeks. Like people do multi-week fasts. Mm. Normal people like you and I. And it's not that it's easy, but we can survive. We can go a lot less without water, proper hydration, and we can go less without sleep. And so, you know, I'm generalizing it a bit, but if you look at those three things, that's my priority list. Sleep, hydration, nutrition. Nutrition is so important. We just spent a lot of the time talking about nutrition and the things that we take. But if I'm not hydrated and I'm not well rested, it really doesn't matter as much. And so making sure you're sleeping well, I use an Oura ring to track, but you know, sleeping well is number one. I put electrolytes in my water. I make sure I drink enough of it. And if I don't, I definitely feel it. And then it's eating the right foods and taking the right supplements that are right for me. Not, you know, mm-hmm. not everybody needs vitamin D or vitamin B, but for me, I do. Those are the hierarchy that I found, you know, when I hit all three, amazing. But if I don't get my sleep, that's by far the number one. If I don't get my hydration, that's definitely number two.
That's so interesting too, because I feel like the average person maybe starting to get into their health or putting more effort into their health might flip that hierarchy and focus on, you know, hit the ground running with nutrition and the health that they're putting into their body immediately. And then, you know, water is always kind of in the middle. We all know we should probably all drink more water. And sleep, I think, is so easy to just let go. And even sometimes we think it's a good thing if we're getting less sleep. Oh, we're so busy. We're doing this and I don't have time for sleep. You know, I'm putting so much effort and energy into all these other things. That's good for me. And people aren't getting enough sleep in turn.
And I'd put movement in there too. I mean, movement might even trump sleep, because sometimes you can use movement in a way to kind of like, say you are jet lagged in travel. Like there's some studies that show like immediate exercise can do so many beneficial things. So movement is definitely in there as well. But it's, you know, everyone, that's just kind of what I came up with and is working for me. Ultimately, I make sure I'm doing all four of those things. And I would say at 38 years old, this is the healthiest I've ever felt. However, my age is starting to catch up to me. Like I still play basketball, not competitively, but in a league, and like, you know, injuries don't heal as fast. And so I do still rely on, you know, it's not, there are things outside of myself. Interestingly, the rave right now is all peptides. I started trying a peptide as of yesterday. I got my brother at the pharmacy hooking me up to try to help with some knee tendonitis I have. So there are tools in the more modern medical model. You know, peptides are different than a pharmaceutical, of course, but they're more on that spectrum that can be really helpful.
Totally. Which is why I think the focus on education and just one, understanding your own body, but also understanding the options that are out there is so huge. So both the work that you're doing with, you know, offering these natural pain creams and alternatives to opiates or other things, and these tests where people can look more at what they need for their specific bodies, and just educating people is so, so important. So yeah, this is huge, especially the way I think I was looking back at my test results, and I know eggs were really high on mine. I don't typically eat eggs, and I know it's in everything, but since this test, I haven't sought out eating eggs in a lot of things, or just like eating basic baked goods, things that eggs would likely be in. And the other thing, cashews, not that I ate a ton of cashews, but it must be something in our family, but cashews were high for both Caroline, myself, and my dad, who all did this test. And not that I eat cashews very frequently, but I consciously just said, I'm just not gonna eat a cashew if it was presented to me. And certain things like that, chicken as well. I was quite surprised that chicken was in the yellow zone. So slightly problematic for me. And consciously, I didn't eliminate chicken entirely and completely avoid it all the time. But I do choose, if presented, you know, chicken or beef, I'd be choosing beef more often. And it's really interesting that I would never have even thought of these things or had these thought processes if I wasn't educated on my own body in this sense.
Yeah. Okay. I have a question, because, and Catherine had chicken come up as her like kind of yellow mid zone, but I actually had beef and chicken was cool for me. Mm-hmm. So then the kind of conflict I think of is, hey, if people are in the same household, if they're maybe eating and cooking together, how do you navigate that? If you have something that comes up as a mild reaction, how much is too much of having that? Like,
it's all up to you.
Is there, okay.
Now, what I would say is, let's say, we have somebody that just did the test and this is a consultation for the next 8 weeks, try to have none.
Right.
Try to have none, completely eliminate it. And then what it allows us to do, if you can go 8 weeks without having, say, beef as an example, then for the next, so now we get to 8 weeks and beef's the thing you miss the most. Well, okay, we're going to start off. We're going to reintroduce beef. You're going to have one good serving of beef. You can eat it throughout the next 2 weeks, but really one great serving on day one. Do not change anything else in your diet.
Sure.
Pay very close attention to how you feel. Oftentimes, by taking that 8 weeks off with a food like beef or chicken that are not like these chronically inflammatory foods, we talked about the issues with gluten, a lot of the issues with gluten, dairy, and eggs is the way we make them. It's not necessarily them. It's like, think about what we do to the cows and the chickens, etc.
Sure.
And, you know, it could be the same with the chicken breasts, not just the eggs, but you know, when you reintroduce it, sometimes the body's like, yeah, I'm cool. I got my break from it. I got to reset and we healed some other things. Maybe there were other inflammatory issues that are now reduced. Like you're not going to eat gluten anymore. That's causing this threshold of inflammation to not get reached. Other times you'll see, wow, I don't feel great when I eat this food and I didn't realize it. And so you become the judge. Most people take the results. If it was in the yellow, most people say, I'm going to limit it, just like you guys did. A lot of people, like the elite athletes we work with, are like, I'm just never going to have it again. That's not me. Me personally, I found that if I have gluten, it really messes with me. I had gluten, dairy, and eggs on my test. I never really liked dairy. Gluten was in everything, but I knew it affected me just like you, Caroline. But eggs was the one that, like, I didn't seek out eggs, but they're in everything. And I found over years and years of having this test data that if I have a little bit of eggs, I feel fine. If I ate eggs every day, I probably wouldn't. But if I have a little bit of gluten, done. Like, I feel awful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good to know. I think I feel similarly as well. Like, eggs, like I said, I haven't been going out of my way cooking eggs for myself, but obviously I haven't been limiting them from, like, anything baked or any pastas or things that it might be in. But gluten as well, I notice it, like, immediately, and it lingers with me for days. But it is good to know that, especially when you get the test results back and you see that things are on a different spectrum, that it's not an all or nothing and like you're cutting out things for life. I really like the emphasis on just understanding it and then being able to make the personal choices from there. I think that is definitely what we are all about here, is like know as much as you can know and then do your best at it. Like,
man, with that knowledge that you have. Try things, like never just stick to, like, even with the supplements I take a lot of them. Like, you know, of course I'm in this industry and my dad runs all these tests on me and genetic tests and we can identify, but then I'll take a month off, you know, and just, I don't want to have to rely on these things. Now I can't get a lot of the vitamins and minerals that I take through our food supply anymore. So I really do need a supplement, but I want to make sure that, like, my body's not just getting used to me taking these things all the time. Right. And see how I feel when I'm off them. Sometimes I feel great. And I'll just stay off them and then maybe reintroduce them in a couple months.
I love that approach. It makes things a lot more digestible. No pun intended. But absolutely. I feel like a lot of kind of lifestyle changes and nutrition changes, especially as people are learning more about both themselves and the greater options that we have, it's so overwhelming, especially to say, hey, if I make this change, it's forever, which of course the goal is to make these healthy, positive changes for ourselves forever. And, you know, get those good benefits forever. But it is really daunting when, you know, you say, I'm going to start taking a supplement and I have to do it every single day forever. And I'm going to continue adding things. And taking that approach of just more, hey, how does this make me feel? How is my body reacting to it is so much more approachable. And I think beneficial for both myself and everyone else listening that's taking these steps too. I have two questions for you about specific ingredients that you may or may not know the answer to. But I do know that they're trending and they're something that I've tried. One, beef tallow, and two, A2 milk versus the A1 and A2 cow milk.
So I only know a little bit about each of these. And to be honest, I know so little, I probably shouldn't even comment too much on them. I think it goes back to the things we were just talking about. Try them.
Yeah.
And especially with, like, the milk, I have heard specific people, especially with children, that saw great results with different rashes that they would get from the different type of milk and being able to use this. And so again, it comes down to the uniqueness of each person. And then beef tallow, I'm mostly a huge believer because of what it replaces.
Right.
So I don't necessarily know how great it is of itself, but it replaces something that we're pretty certain of is really bad for us. Right. So to me, that's a massive improvement.
Yeah. Awesome. I know I love cooking with beef tallow, and I've just recently started using A2 milk, which I've tried to, not that dairy was a problem on what I found in my test results, but I do think dairy is obviously one of those big three. So I've been trying to limit my dairy intake and see how that affects.
Do you feel different?
It's literally been the last, like, 2 weeks that I've really, really stopped. The only dairy I do drink is in a latte in the morning. So I've been doing Americanos instead, and I have not felt any negative changes. So yeah, I'm excited to see as we get closer to the 4 and 8 week mark with me taking out dairy, see how it impacts me. But yeah, I totally love that approach, especially with the beef tallow. And I think just that thought process gets people more conscious of what they're using too. So again, less about the product and, hey, this is a miracle product, because there are probably very few things in this world that are miracle products and are going to work for everyone. But I love the thought process around I'm now being conscious of what I'm putting in, of how I'm cooking my food and what I'm putting in my body. And I know that I'm not using these harsher alternatives for my body. So
I read this quote yesterday. It was about working out, but I think it could be applied to this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, your confidence does not come from the six pack abs. It comes from your ability to go to the gym every day to get the six pack abs. Mm-hmm. It's the process, totally. Right? So it's like a lot of wellness is the process of every day, being diligent, being mindful. Mm-hmm. There's something really powerful in that. And like, yes, at the end of a couple months, you can feel these amazing differences, but you start like, it starts to really compound early when you see that first sign of like, wow, I'm doing something better for myself.
Yeah.
To me, that's more important than that end result.
So we talked about that recently on an episode we did about discipline, about how a lot of the time it doesn't even matter what the specific healthy habit is. It matters that you are just doing a healthy habit because it kind of proves to yourself like, well, I can do something to make myself feel good. And it builds that momentum to just like always be making healthy choices.
Yeah. A good example, like this is something that I just started 2 months ago. I was like, I'm not really working. I have a son. Like I'm just not, my body was starting to like deplete. I don't work out anymore. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do 11 pushups. Mm. And then I just did 11 pushups. And then the next time I'm going to do 12. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, it's 2 months later and I'm doing full 30 minute workouts. And it was just that like process of like, then I got to 55 pushups in a row. I'm like, I can do this. And I start to like notice a little bit. And it's like fractional. I'm the only person in the world that notices, but I'm like, you see that progress and the momentum builds. And then now like, oh, I started taking creatine. Now I'm taking some peptides to try to get my knee better. And like really, really do the things I need to up level mm-hmm. my body. And like starting to feel like, that's when I said, I'm the healthiest I think I've ever been in my life, even at 38 years old, because my gut is finally healthy. Mm-hmm. I started to kind of figure out the nuances of like the things that my body needs. I eat healthy. I'm sleeping good. My gut feels great. Like those to me are the big things.
Yeah.
Which in just your own personal health and wellness, it is so exponential based on what you're implementing. You learn what you like and don't like. And then as you start to feel better and better and get more confident in, hey, I can do this. I think it's learning to trust yourself. Karen and I talk a lot about confidence in the aspects of doing what you say you're going to do and trusting mm-hmm. yourself. So kind of with these inflammation testing and these food testing, a lot of it is, hey, can I cut this out? Do I have the strength to cut this out and see what actually works? And it's not mm-hmm. about testing whether or not you can eat something or not eat something as much as it is testing, can I put the effort into my health and back into myself?
And you know what it is? Most people that when they make the decision to do the test, obviously there's a financial commitment, but so like I'll use me as an example. It was totally true. I knew gluten didn't make me feel good. I knew it. I wasn't cutting out gluten. When I got the test results back and I invested and paid for the test and then got the results back and it was off the charts and now I had the data, it was the motivation to start. And then mm-hmm. I started to build the progress on it. And so to me, having the data to really like make an informed decision versus like, yeah, I probably shouldn't eat gluten, but like everybody does. So is it that bad? Well, for me, it's really bad. I had the data and I invested to get the data and I wasn't surprised when it showed up. And that was like the trigger I needed to really start cutting out. And it was probably the biggest change I ever made for my health.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because it's kind of like, You can think like, oh, maybe that's bothering me. But like, once you know, and you have that fact, then it becomes a very definitive black and white. I know that this is the better choice for me long term. Am I going to just have the instant gratification of continuing to eat this thing? Or do I care about investing in my long term health enough to do it? Like it kind of all of a sudden is not just like an arbitrary thing anymore. It becomes very like yes or no.
Yeah, which is why I also appreciate that you don't just offer the test, you offer continuing education and continuous solutions, supplements, thought processes around people's health, which is...
We love talking to people that don't even want to do the test. They want to learn more. Sure, maybe down the line, but you know, if anybody wants to reach out, listening to the podcast, like we love helping. That's why I said, I started it off because you framed it up amazingly. Yeah, we sell products, but our goal is to become a brand that's associated with education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We want the tools to be free, getting more sunshine, sleeping well, eating really healthy, nutritious meals, having amazing friends and family and good mental health. Those things are all free. And you know, how can we do that over instead of 30 years of toxic exposure and all these things that we talked about that cause inflammation? How do we do 30 years of that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, like it can be so frustrating, the wellness industry sometimes, because it feels like you're always trying to be sold things. It's like, you know, take this for bloating, take this, like do this workout, do this. And it's just full of very contradictory advice being thrown at you all the time. And it can be hard to like see through that noise and cut through it. And so I think the objective of hey, it is not one size fits all. This product that's being marketed to you, like maybe it solves one thing for one person, but you don't need to listen to every single thing. And having the knowledge about like what actually is going on with your body and what works for you gives somebody the confidence to like actually know what they should be doing and not feel so confused by the industry. So I think it is like a very empowering process that you guys have.
Yeah, I think the biggest trend we're going to see over the next decade, something that we've been focusing on a lot, and it's so cheap and easy. We don't have to sell a product for it. We're looking to develop one to make it easier for people, but it's fiber. Mm. Fiber is going to be the next protein. Yeah. And the more I learn about how important the role that it plays in our gut, again, it goes back to, I think the core is helping make sure we have a healthy, really, really strong gut. There's so many things that start there, our immune system, energy, the digestion, the ability to get nutrients. It's so critical. We've depleted our gut. Those microorganisms, we have 10 trillion microorganisms in a healthy gut. Most people have taken antibiotics or eaten food with antibiotics or had glyphosate, all these sort of things that have caused massive reductions in the healthy bacteria. And then if that's the case and you don't eat enough soluble fiber, that's the food that the healthy bacteria needs to eat and consume to produce the things the body needs. If you don't eat enough fiber, you can't produce it. And 95% of men and 91% of women in the United States do not eat enough soluble fiber. So it's going to be a massive, easy thing we can do to start looking at the food we eat. How can we eat more prebiotic soluble fiber? And that's why we launched our gut microbiome test to look at, is your gut producing those compounds? These things called short chain fatty acids, postbiotics. You have the prebiotic, that's the fiber, the probiotic, that's the healthy bacteria, and the postbiotic, these short chain fatty acids that the gut microbes produce. These things, when you start to dig in, and there's hundreds of thousands of studies on these, it's not new, but understanding how important they are. One example, athletes, butyric acid, one of these short chain fatty acids, is up to 20% of the energy in our body. Athletes have been shown to produce more of it. One reason is exercise produces more butyric acid. So does yoga and meditation, interestingly, right? A lot of healthy things have an effect on our gut. So it kind of goes both ways. But if you can eat more fiber that helps produce more butyric acid and you're low in that to begin with, which I was super low, I was able to triple my production by just eating a specific fiber for me. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And like you could really feel a difference. And then my gut felt more stable because it's getting the fuel it needs and the microbes are there to help do the things it needs to do. So mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the biggest trend that we see in health and wellness for the next decade.
Yeah. Well, funny, I was going to ask to close the episode, what is one gut health habit everyone should do daily? But I feel like fiber would probably be that answer.
Yeah. And to be specific, I think everybody would benefit from more fiber, but it's always unique. So, you know, there are people that eat enough fiber. Of course, you know, you could be in the top 5%, but all fiber is not created equal, and it's not created equal for you. It's the whole reason that we developed the test, is because we want to identify which type of fiber is going to give the microbes that you need. So depending if you're producing too much butyric and not enough acetic acid, as an example, it's a completely different soluble fiber that's going to help feed those microbes and not the ones that you already overproduce. Mm-hmm. And so anybody would benefit from more fiber for the most part, especially prebiotic soluble fiber. And then if you really want to take it to the next level, you start to identify the difference between oat bran fiber, beta-glucan. Some of these fibers have like 45 letters. I'm not even going to try to pronounce them for you, but there's many different types that there's clinical studies that show they can improve these specific outputs that you're looking for.
Mm. Well, very interesting. Ryan, thank you so much for this conversation and for coming on Girls with Goals. We're so excited to have you and be able to educate ourselves and our listeners on all of these things that I think like really affect our day-to-day and our health. For anyone listening who doesn't know the Feel Good Lab, where could they find you or where could they find products?
Honestly, you know, we don't do a great job on social media. You know, I like to say we're a small family-run business that casts a disproportionate shadow. So like we look bigger than we are. We've been fortunate to go on Good Morning America and national TV and stuff, but we're still a small business.
Sure.
You know, you run here in Connecticut, but I love connecting with people personally. You can email me like ryan@thefeelgoodlab.com. You can find our contact information on our website, thefeelgoodlab.com. And of course, you can find us on social.
Wow.
Cool. And actually, I'll set up a discount code for anybody that wants to order anything, any test, anything. It'll be Girls with Goals. And we'll give a really nice discount and throw in some freebies for anybody that orders.
Amazing. Okay. Well, we'll make sure we put that in the description of the show on Spotify and Apple and wherever you're listening.
Cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.